If it's a pretty simple word, just two letters, I and F, small in the grand scheme of things. And yet, depending on how it is used, it can be extremely powerful. It can evoke all sorts of things. It can give us clear direction, or it can give us fear. The Cambridge Dictionary refers to this word, if. It says it's used to say that a particular thing can or will happen, but only after something else happens or becomes true. So it may or may not become true, and the thing that may or may not happen, well, it may not. If. Some of you who have done computer programming are familiar with if-then statements. When I was a kid in high school and they had us pecking away at these really ancient computers, we were learning how to do basic programming, and we learned if-then statements. It was if you put in, we'll say a number or information, and that equaled or was greater than or less than the information that the computer had, then the computer would respond to that by saying, then go here, or do this procedure. If then. You know, there's a lot of ways that that word can be used today, especially in this day of information. As we receive information, if that's true, then this may happen. Or then we will do something. But I believe another way that the word is used, if, and it's probably used far more than any other way in our world today, during this, again, great information age, is what if? Or maybe I should say, what if? See the difference there? There's a whole lot of what ifs happening in our society today. What if something bad happens? Because it feels like bad is happening. And what if it gets worse? See, that's not a direction. It is an open-ended fear statement. That's what it does. Because you don't know what may or may not happen. And we're being bombarded by this all the time. You know, in the news, they believe that if it bleeds, it leads. Because the media understands that the more scary, the more traumatizing, the more horrific a news story is, the more we as humans will lock in on it. Some of you may have heard, you know, it's like, well, I couldn't look away. It was like a train accident. You know, I just couldn't. I had to see it. Something strange about us as humans. But the media understands this. They have for a long time. That the more scary or morbid a story was, the more people would look and read or view it. And let's face it, that attracts more readers. And the more readers there are, the more advertisers there are. And the more advertisers there are, the more money there is. See, that's what it really comes down to. Who's getting rich off of it? And they know how to attract the people to them. This is something that politicians and leaders have known forever. If we make the people afraid, then they'll follow me. You know, it goes back all the way to the beginning. I think the first person who was known as a dictator or a tyrant was Nimrod in the Bible. if you read some of the Jewish commentaries, and it says he was a mighty hunter, was that there were fierce animals in the land, and the people were afraid for their safety. But he was so powerful, so big and strong, and had a way of hunting these animals that he said, well, follow me, gather to me. And of course, he founded Babylon, the Tower of Babel. And the people followed him, and he ruled them. As again, the Bible calls him a tyrant. And nothing's ever changed. You know, I can think of in my own life, just going back to the 70s, the things that were constantly being told to us, that be afraid, and this might happen, so therefore, elect me. You know, the nuclear arms race that would destroy the whole world. Acid rain that would destroy the whole world. In the 70s, it wasn't global warming, it was global cooling. Another ice age that will cover the whole world. It didn't change. What if the Russians attack? You know, it's always something. What if? It's always about fear. And then we're told to trust the leaders and the politicians. Trust the experts, because they know the truth. You know, we are going to run out of fossil fuels. I was in high school, and I remember this being in my science book. Was, you know, the experts all agreed that the oil that came from the earth came from dinosaur bones. And once those dinosaur bones had been depleted and the oil had come from them, we'd be out. So now the experts say that, well, that wasn't quite accurate. You mean it was completely wrong? Yes. But we're told to trust. How many of you have heard that in the year 2020? Only to have the experts change their minds and opinions over and over and over again. But have they ever told you, don't worry? No. It's still, be afraid. Trust us. Today, things have gotten worse. And again, this fear, this what's going to happen? What if? We're having it pumped into us at a higher rate than at any other time in human history. The news media, and even the social media, we're having it broadcast to us constantly. I remember growing up in the church as a young boy and hearing Mr. Armstrong talk about how Satan was the prince of the power of the air, and he was always broadcasting. And he talked about it with these airwaves. You know, it's always being pushed. I think Mr. Armstrong would be shocked at how much is being pushed in today's society. And let's face it, I think, let's be honest with ourselves. Has there been a moment in the last year or so that you've had those questions of what if get the better of you? You know, you're watching things on the news, you're hearing all these things, and all of a sudden, the fear sets in. And it starts to grab a hold of you. And you kind of feel a little bit undone by it. We've had riots in the streets. We've had racial tension at an all-time high. Absolute hatred by people who claim to be about love, unless you disagree with them. We have all sorts of questions. Not just questions that you and I are asking, but a lot of people are asking. Is this the end? What if COVID is the plague? What if our money becomes no good because our economy crashes? What do we do? And then as Christians, as we see the moral decline, and we look at prophecy, we may think, what if they come for us? As Christians. And maybe some of us as parents, even more frightening, think, what about our children? You know, there are people who are calling for that, taking away children from families that are considered Christian conservative, right wing, so that they can be re-educated away from those hate mongers. See, what if it has power? But it's not a word that we as Christians should be focused on. I truly don't believe that this use of the word if should be in our vocabulary. We need to learn that it is not if, but when. About 350 years before the time of Christ, there were a few empires. One at the time was the Persian Empire. It was massive. And then there was this little nation that was Greece. Now, Greece was made up of city-states. They had their own city, and they had a wall around it, and they had their own army. But they were not truly united. They would come together and compete against each other during the Olympic Games. And more often than not, they would war with each other. You know, the armies of Athens would march against one of the other cities, and they would do battle. Well, there arose a man, Philip II of Macedon, who decided that he was going to unite all of Greece under his authority. And by uniting all of Greece, they would now become a world power, and they could actually attack the Persian Empire. And so he started about this by going to other city-states. And he was a man who could do what needed to be done. He would use diplomacy. He would try to sell them on what a great idea this would be and how they should submit themselves to him. But if they didn't agree with that, he would use force. He would conquer their city and say, now you're mine anyway. Now, he had done this through the south of Greece. He had conquered many of the key players, the key city-states, before he turned to the last one, which was Sparta. Now, Sparta was a city-state of Greece that was known as a very different kind of place than the other cities. They had a warrior ethos, you know, and they did not believe in the wealth and in the grandeur and in the things which democracy had brought to Greece. You know, we get the term Spartan, meaning a very simplistic lifestyle. We get that from Sparta. They were committed to the warrior ethos, to their duty, above all other things, to do what was right. Well, Philip II decided that Sparta needed to get in line, and he sent them a message and gave them the same choice that he'd given to the other places. He said that whether he should come, or that he asked whether he should come as friend or foe. Do you want me to come as your friend or your enemy? And they replied with a very Spartan sort of way, with one word. They said, neither. One word with so much power. It says so much, just that one word. Don't bother. We don't want you as a friend or as an enemy. You just stay over there. Well, Philip was known for having a very fiery temper. He was ferocious. And he sent them back another message. And he said, "You are advised to submit without further delay. For if I bring my army into your land, I will destroy your farms. I will slay your people and raze your city." And they replied again with a single word. If. They were not afraid. And he outnumbered them. That huge army that he had managed to gather and get all the other city-states to submit to did not budge the Spartans. They didn't even try to worry about diplomacy. They just said one word. If. Meaning that's not decided that that's what's going to happen. That one word had a pretty dramatic effect. You know what Philip did? He left them alone. No matter what he presented to them, they were not afraid. And he decided this was not a fight he wanted to tackle. In fact, it made such an impression upon him that his son, Alexander the Great, who conquered the known world during his lifetime, left the Spartans alone too. He didn't even bother to try and convince them or go after them. The Spartans were soldiers to the very core, every fiber of their being. And they knew something that we as Christian soldiers need to learn. Soldiers expect war. They expect conflict. They expect to be attacked and hated. And they've made peace with it. They know that the question is not if it happens, but when it happens. We heard Mr. Booth mention that in the sermonette. It's not if these things come upon us, but when. If you would, turn with me to Daniel 3. See, this is what we have to come to peace with, brethren. This is a story that most of our children know about Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. Daniel 3. Now Nebuchadnezzar is the king. He's the emperor, again, of the largest empire in the world. He's the most powerful man on the earth. Verse 1, Nebuchadnezzar the king made an image of gold whose height was 60 cubits and its width 6 cubits. He set it up on the plain of Dura in the province of Babylon. And King Nebuchadnezzar sent word to gather together the satraps, the administrators, the governors, the counselors, the treasurers, the judges, the magistrates, and all the officials of the provinces to come to the dedication of the image which King Nebuchadnezzar had set up. He made a decree, and it was proclaimed throughout all the land. All the leaders had to respond to this because he said so. Does any of this kind of sound familiar? And so the satraps, the administrators, the governors, the counselors, the treasurers, the judges, the magistrates, and all the officials of the provinces gathered together for the dedication of the image that King Nebuchadnezzar had set up. And they stood before the image that Nebuchadnezzar had stood up. And then a herald cried aloud, "To you it is commanded, O peoples, nations, and languages, everyone in the empire, that at the time that you hear the sound of the horn, flute, harp, lyre, and psaltery, in symphony with all kinds of music, you shall fall down and worship the gold image that King Nebuchadnezzar has set up. And whoever does not fall down and worship shall be cast immediately into the midst of a burning, fiery furnace. You will do this or die. And it went throughout all the land. All the people heard it. All the governors. How would they respond? And when they heard it, all the people, all the languages fell down and worshiped the golden image. Except a few. Look at verse 8. Therefore, at that time, certain Chaldeans came forward and accused the Jews. See, the Chaldeans, all these peoples, nations, and languages were a part of the empire. They knew each other. And within the empire, they hated each other. They hated the Jews. And they spoke and said to King Nebuchadnezzar, O king, live forever. You, O king, have made a decree that everyone who hears the sound of this music shall fall down and worship the gold image. And whoever does not fall down shall be cast into the midst of a burning fiery furnace. And there are certain Jews, and they're saying, you know these Jews, whom you have set over the affairs of the province of Babylon, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. These men, O king, have not paid due regard to you. They do not serve your gods or worship the golden image that you have set up. You know, this wasn't a sudden thing. How long before the day and age of the internet and television, the day and age of, you know, the automobile, the train, the telegraph wire, it would have taken well over a month for this information to be spread throughout the entire empire. Plenty of time for Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego to think about it. What if? What if we don't bow down? What if our enemies turn on us and tell on us? What if they turn us in? What will we do then? They had time to think about it, to fix it in their hearts and minds what they would do. And Nebuchadnezzar, in rage and fury, gave the command to bring Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. And so they brought these men before the king. And he asked them, is it true? Come on. You know me. And you know what will happen. And this is what I heard. And he says, is it true, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, that you do not serve my gods or worship the golden image that I set up? He says, now, if you are ready, I'm going to give you a chance because you know what the consequences are and you know the man that I am. I'm going to give you a chance to redeem yourself. It won't be that hard. Come on. It's just for a moment. You're going to hear some music. And when you do, you just fall down and worship the image which I have made. Good. But if you do not worship, well, you will be cast immediately into the midst of a burning fiery furnace because, you know, I gave my word. And who is the God who will deliver you from my hands? See, one of the scary things about this, and I think Nebuchadnezzar was counting on it, was the threat right in front of us is usually far more intimidating and scary than faith, something you can't see, but just a belief. And he's like, because if you don't do what I do, I am physically going to have you cast into the fiery furnace. Now you think about that and decide what you want to do. Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego answered and said to the king, O Nebuchadnezzar, we have no need to answer you in this matter. If that is the case, there's that word again, our God, whom we serve, is able to deliver us from the burning fiery furnace, and he will deliver us from your hand, O king. But if not, there are other translations of this who actually translate this as, even if not, let it be known to you, O king, that we do not serve your gods, nor will we worship the gold image which you have set up. And Nebuchadnezzar was full of fury, and the expression on his face changed towards them. You know, this is that change. And maybe you've seen it before. You know, someone who says, well, we think, you know, that in our country, it's just live and let live. And whatever, you know, people want to do, that's okay. But if you say no, I think that's wrong. I think that's a sin. Their expression will change towards you. And they will hate you. This is what happened with Nebuchadnezzar. He spoke and commanded that they heat the furnace 7 times more than it was usually heated. He didn't need to do that. I mean, you know, level 1 would have done it. But he wanted it to be that much more horrific, so that everyone would see what happens if you cross the king. And he has them bound in their coats, their trousers and their turbans and their garments, and they were cast into the midst of the fiery furnace. It was so hot that the men who threw them in were actually killed by the blast of the furnace. In verse 32, then King Nebuchadnezzar was astonished, and he rose in haste and spoke, saying to his counselors, did we not cast 3 men bound into the midst of the fire? And they answered him, yes, it's true. He says, but look, I see 4 men loose walking in the midst of the fire, and they are not hurt. And the form of the 4th is like the Son of God. He recognized this was a deity. There was power here. And then Nebuchadnezzar went near the mouth of the burning fiery furnace and spoke, saying, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, servants of the Most High God, come out and come here. Then Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego came from the midst of the fire, and all of them saw it. All the leaders who had been gathered from all over the empire witnessed this. And they saw that their clothes had not been burned, and the fire had no power over them. Not a single hair on their heads had been singed. In fact, their clothes didn't even smell like smoke. And Nebuchadnezzar spoke, saying, blessed be the God of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, who sent his angel and delivered his servants who trusted in him. And they have frustrated the king's word. They obeyed the commandments of God instead of the commandments of men, and yielded their bodies that they should not serve nor worship any god except their own. Brethren, are we ready to yield our bodies so that we will not worship another god, but to only worship God the Father, the true God, no matter what? I wonder that question. You know, I've wondered about it myself. I grew up in this faith, reading the prophecies of what could come. What if this happens to me? What will I do? It's a scary thought. But we have been attacked before. I remember a time when our church came under attack, not from outside the church, but actually from within. I grew up in the church, down in Big Sandy for the most part. And from within the church, there was an administration, a new administration. Mr. Armstrong had died, and others had stepped up. And they came out, and they said, well, you know, we've come upon this new understanding, and they kind of slid it in from the side. And, of course, like good soldiers, you're like, well, I don't understand these orders, but I'm going to try. And then some of it just didn't make any sense. And so we questioned it. And, boy, they did not like being questioned. And then the gloves came off and the masks disappeared. And then it became, you will accept this. You will bow down to these foreign gods or else. Again, where I lived, most of the people worked for the church in some way or another, whether it was with the administration or at the campus. And they did lose their jobs, their careers. Some of them lost their families. But they would not accept what was wrong and bow down to other gods. I knew one man, he literally said, I will not bow down. He said, I have given my life to the true worship of God, to this church. And he says, I will die before I give up God's law, his Sabbath, and his holy days. It was amazing to see what people were willing to suffer and endure. To hold fast to the ecclesia, the church of God, which is not an organization, but is the spiritual body of Christ. Those who obey him, who have his spirit. You know, that was more than 25 years ago now. And, well, let me ask, how many of you remember that? A lot of you. See, because it happened here in South Dakota, too. It wasn't just down there. It wasn't just in Pasadena, California. It was everywhere. People were given a choice. Submit. Or essentially die away from the church. And yet everyone who held fast was determined that nothing was going to keep us apart. It was a very clear and full frontal attack upon our foundational beliefs. And we saw it for what it was. Now, since then, things haven't been easy. You know, there were a few groups that broke away, the biggest ones, and then there were more splits and more breaks and divisions, separations. I think of it in many ways kind of like the empire which Alexander established. Once he died, all the different generals decided to take their piece of the pie, and they would break away and say, well, I'm going to do it this way, and I'm going to do it that way. And so they established it. Now, where are we today? Because let's face it, the last 25 years have been enough to make a good soldier grow weary, right? Holding fast. But what's happening? Has Satan stopped his attack on the church? Of course not. He hasn't stopped. But I do believe that just now he's attacking us from the side. I think we've been hearing about all the what ifs, all the bad stuff. Maybe. Be afraid. You guys know what a fishmonger is? A fishmonger is someone who sells fish. I believe we have, well, a society that are fear mongers. They're selling fear. They're saying, be afraid. Because, let's face it, those of us who survived that 25 years ago, what in the world would ever make us forsake the assembling of ourselves together? Because we've already been through the battle. Nothing's going to stop us, except, what if I get sick? What if something bad happens? You know, it's not a fiery furnace, because I'd let them throw me in. Remember, that's big and kind of obvious. It's not an army, because we've stood that battle. It's a virus. Maybe what's scary about that is you can't see it. And there's somebody over here going, the death count keeps going up. And you don't know where you might get it. You can't see it. It could be anywhere. It could be on anyone. Hide. Run away. Whatever you do, don't gather together. Don't keep the sacred assembly. Anxiety eats away at you. And sometimes that scary threat that you can't see is more scary than the thing that you can. It can topple our resolve, rob us of courage, and make us want to hide. Especially when they tell us that it's for our own good. Or maybe it's for the good of others. You know? Don't be around them, because heaven forbid you cause one of them to die. How could you? Shame on you. Brethren, soldiers are not allowed to break ranks. When they're assembled together, that you don't leave. You're not allowed to run and hide. We have a job to do, a duty. And let's face it, we think of Roman soldiers and their armor. We think of the Spartans and their courage. And we're not going to go to war like that. But we have to have the same resolve. You know, another example of that was, I believe, Esther, a young woman who, again, married to the king, Persian Empire, during a time when the enemy of the Jews decided he wanted to wipe out all the Jews. He hated them, and he wanted to take everything they had, much like happened in Nebuchadnezzar's time. Now, Esther had been taken from her, what was left of her family, her uncle, because of her youth and her beauty, and given to be the queen and the wife of the king. And this proclamation, again, went out from the seat of power to all the land, that on this date, all of you rise up and wipe out the Jews, and then take whatever they have. So Esther's uncle got in touch with her. And he says, you need to go to the king. You need to plead and change his heart towards the Jews and save your people. Her response was, all the king's servants and people of the king's provinces know that any man or woman who goes into the inner court to the king who has not been called, he has but one law. Put all to death, except the one to whom the king holds out the golden scepter, that he may live. Do you know how everyone knew that law? Because just like that fiery furnace with Nebuchadnezzar, they'd seen it enacted. And they knew he wasn't kidding. We're not told, but it's possible that no one had ever had that golden scepter pointed at them. And she says, and by the way, I haven't seen my husband in 30 days. We're not that close Mordecai responds to her, and he says, "Do not think in your heart that you will escape the king's palace any more than all the other Jews." And let's face it, as we read prophecies, what's our hope? That we can escape the things that are going to come. We don't want to go through any of that. But as Mordecai says, guess what? It's not if, it's when. And he says, "For if you remain completely silent at this time, relief and deliverance will arise for the Jews from another place. If you forsake your post, God will bring in someone else, but you and your father's house will perish. Yet who knows whether you have come to the kingdom for such a time as this?" And so, like a soldier, this young woman readied herself. She told them to have all the Jews gather to fast, to not eat or drink for 3 days or three nights. She and her handmaidens did the same. And she says, "And so I will then go to the king, which is against the law. I'm going to break the law. And if I perish, I perish. If I die, I die." Brethren, each and every one of you have been called and chosen at this time, during these years, for just such a time as this. Have you ever thought about that? That now is your time? Troubles will come. And let's face it, what's going on right now doesn't even compare to what's going to come. Good soldiers who have committed their lives fully, they are prepared. Because it's not if, it's when. Now, Esther was a beautiful young woman. She had a steel resolve. And she loved not her life unto the death. But you know, she had everything to live for. But her calling was more important. She decided, if I die, then I die. So be it. How do we compare, brethren? Now, does that mean that we don't have fear? Come on, of course not. We do. That does not mean that we are foolish with our health or our lives. You know, it's just like today, right? We live in South Dakota. We have weather alerts and weather warnings. But let's face it. I mean, we have bad road conditions half the year in South Dakota. You know, it's a fact of life. We have to learn to live with it, to get on with it, to be about our business, our lives. We all have the responsibility to look and judge and discern. You know, I often look at it and think, well, if I had to go to work, would I go? Well, yeah. So can I go to church? Well, yeah, I can. Now, again, we're not to be foolish. If there's a blizzard going on out there and it's a sheet of ice, well, that would be foolish to go out into. Again, South Dakotans have known that forever. Our health is the same way. Courage, brethren, is not the absence of fear. Rather, courage is doing what needs to be done in spite of our fears. Because we know we have it to do. We go forward. And we always wonder how it is that we're going to do. I have a friend that I've spoken about before who was over in the Middle East and Iraq at that point. It was blown up and then attacked by insurgents. And he fought until the last bullet. And then the cavalry arrived, and he was saved at the last second. And he spent months and months in hospitals being repaired. And he died several times and was brought back. And I was visiting him in the hospital. And our wives and our kids had gone into another area, and he and I were just talking. And we got to kind of talking about that. And I asked him if he had any regrets. He said no. And he said, I would never, ever want my son to go through what I went through. I don't ever want him to see war like I have. He said, but you know, when we were boys playing war out in the woods, army, he said, we always wondered what we would do. And he said, you know, you go into it thinking, I'm going to be Rambo.
Right.
But the truth is far different. And he said, you know, you train for war, for the worst case scenario. You practice and you try to think about it, but you don't know what will happen until it happens. And he said, the one thing that gives me comfort is I didn't quit. He said, I did my job down to the last bullet. He said, now I know. I didn't fail. But it almost cost him his life. In many ways, it did. Brethren, we can't focus on the what ifs, because they will come. We have to rather look at it and say, even if that happens, I will not quit. Christ knew that when he spoke with his disciples, when he founded his church. He knew what would come. In Matthew 10, verse 16, he's talking to his disciples, and he says, I will send you out as sheep in the midst of wolves. Have you ever felt like that? Like a sheep surrounded by wolves? One time in my misspent youth, I got caught in a dark alley in Dallas, surrounded by a gang. I felt like a sheep amongst wolves. And he says, that's how I'm sending you out. Therefore, be wise as serpents and harmless of doves. Don't be foolish. Don't just throw your lives away. Be wise with them. You know, if there's a ridiculous risk, don't take it. But you have to know when. And he says, be aware of men, for they will, again, it's not if, it's they will deliver you up to councils and scourge you in their synagogues. You will be brought before governors and kings of for my sake, as a testimony to them and to the Gentiles. But when they deliver you up, do not worry about how and what you should speak, for it will be given to you at that hour what you should speak. For it is not you who speak, but the Spirit of your Father who speaks in you. You know, for all of us who get up behind the podium and teach, how scary is that? I'm nervous about it right now. And I often wonder, it's like, you know, if I had more faith, would it not be so hard? But this is nothing compared to what we will be called upon to do. And he says in verse 21, "Now brother will deliver up brother to death, and a father his child, and children will rise against parents and cause them to be put to death. And you will be hated for all, or by all, for my name's sake." Brethren, how hard is that? To know that you're hated because of who you are, because of what you believe. But he who endures to the end will be saved. When they persecute you in this city, flee to another. For assuredly, I say to you, you will not have gone through the cities of Israel before the Son of Man comes. And this is the example that he gives them. He says, a disciple is not above his teacher, nor a servant above his master. He's saying, you're my disciples, and I'm the teacher, the master. It is enough for a disciple that he be like his teacher, and a servant like his master. He says, if they have called the master of the house Beelzebub, how much more will they call those of his household? If they hate me and are willing to crucify me, how much more do you think they're going to hate you? Therefore, do not fear them. You can't be afraid of it. It's a matter of accepting it and saying, if it happens, then I'm doing the work that I've been given. Again, my friends that were in the military, they talk about, you know, it's no matter how hard you train, no matter how good a soldier you are, no matter how tough you are, stuff happens. A bullet out of nowhere. It's got your name on it. You know, a bomb goes off next to you, and that's it. And if you focus on the, what if there's a bullet with my name on it? What if there's a car bomb out there that goes off while I'm near it? Then you can't do your job. So you have to go, what if? So what? I've got a job to do. Christ says, therefore, do not fear them. For there is nothing covered that will not be revealed, and hidden that will not be known. The sins of this world will be revealed. And I think during those times of testing, what's hidden inside of us will be revealed as well. It says, whatever you tell in the dark, or whatever I tell you in the dark, speak in the light. And what you hear in the ear, preach on the housetops. Our faith, our belief and understanding is supposed to be preached. You know, but it's so hard because we love it and it's close to our heart and we want to protect it. It's precious. And if I give that to someone, not only might they reject it, but they might reject me. They might hate me. You've probably experienced that. I know in my own life, it's funny, I can meet people at a store or just anywhere, talking, visiting. Oh, what do you do for a living? Oh, well, I'm a pastor. Not all the time, but enough that I haven't forgotten them. You know, people can change. Or maybe you're visiting with other Christians and you say, well, I keep God's Sabbath day. Oh. Again, brethren, that's nothing compared to what will happen. Yet we still have to preach it from the housetops. And do not fear those who kill the body but cannot kill the soul. That is your eternal life. But rather fear him who is able to destroy both soul and body in hell. This is the grave. And he says, are not two sparrows sold for a copper coin? So, you know, pretty much worthless for value. But not one of them falls to the ground apart from your Father's will. He knows and he cares for them. How much more so does he care for you? He says, but all the very hairs of your head are all numbered. Do not fear, therefore. You are of more value than many sparrows. Therefore, whomever confesses me before men, him I will also confess before my Father who is in heaven. We have a job to do. But whoever denies me before men, him I will also deny before my Father who is in heaven. That will be the test. Will you give up the true worship of God? Will you bow down to something else? Brethren, I believe that we've been given time to resolve ourselves, to prepare ourselves. Again, just as good soldiers do before a battle. You know, historically, soldiers, when they knew they were going to have a battle the day before, they would take out and fix all of their armor. They would sharpen their swords. And then they would also prepare their hearts and minds for what they would do. They didn't focus on what if, because that would rob them of courage. It was just, this is what we will do. Brethren, we must not fall prey to the fear of what if. That's the message that's being broadcast to the world. Because it isn't what if, it is when. And worrying about it doesn't add one cubit to our height. It actually takes away. It doesn't matter what might happen, brethren, if you have already decided what you will do.